Accession number 14972, Richard Atkinson, reel 13.
Mr. Atkinson, reel 13. The invasion of Sicily has taken place, Mr. Atkinson. What happened next?
Well, the invasion was a bit of a shambles, the first one we'd ever done. Feeling our way, desperately feeling our way. See, we'd come off the desert, and we'd come to this island, and there was green fields, walls, stuff like that, and we're sort of feeling our way, and couldn't believe it when we were seeing what was happening, and just getting ourselves organised, really, collecting stuff that was missing, and stragglers coming in, and stuff like that, and sort of trying to get organised a little bit, because nobody knew really what was going on. Thing like that. We'd seen a lot of dead paratroopers floating in the water, round about us as we came into land, stuff like that. But otherwise.
The battalion companies would be moving forward into advancing or attacking.
Yeah, well, we were sort of easing up the road, but it was so sudden. We seemed to land, and all of a sudden there was an order for a forced march. And by the time we got ourselves together, the lads had set away on a forced march, and we were sort of just collecting ourselves and dragging up the rear more than anything else. And mopping up Italians as we went along, because they didn't know what was happening either, and taking villages and...
Did you see much of the civilians, the Sicilians?
No, not really. You saw the odd ones, because they were, how can I put it? They were leery. They didn't know, I'm using that term leery, because they didn't know what to expect and had never seen British troops and things like that before. And they were just like local farmers, really, that, there was nothing, there was no big cities or anything. It was all countryside and stuff.
Were you coming into action with the enemy? Were you being shelled, for example,
area? No, we had never been shelled. I remember, as you say, I remember one place where the Italians come in with armoured cars and were taken prisoner. They hadn't a clue what was happening, and we hadn't. They just drove in, and all of a sudden were captured, and that was it. And I mean, the colonel was sitting on the town hall steps, dishing his orders out, and you over there, and you do that, and you that, and look at. We weren't actually in a place long enough to get organised. We didn't sort of see like we'll have battalion headquarters there and platoon, the QM stores will be further back and things. We're just going along in a haphazard fashion, really. We put it that way, disorganised chaos.
Were you moving slowly or quickly?
It seemed quickly, but it evidently it wasn't. We're more fascinated what was going on around, like cows and stuff like that, horses and things.
How were the wounded and the casualties coming out?
Well, we didn't have any this time. We never had any. If we had, our local stretcher bearers tend to them, or the field ambulance, but we never saw any. I can honestly remember Stukas, I think it was, fighter planes when we landed, but we just watched them and thought it was a joke book. We'd run around trees to drop the bomb for them, but that was about all. I never saw another thing until Prunasol. It was quiet, actually, compared to what we had seen.
And your role, as you've described, was running backwards and forwards, just bringing
just
up materials.
Transport, just the normal things. I was with the captain quartermaster by this time, and just making sure the companies had their rations and were drawn from the dispersal points with divisional RSC where they were just we're just going down and bringing up in bulk and was getting spirit amongst the quartermasters and stuff like that. It was just normal what we do in England sort of style, just getting into divisional runs, so brigade run.
So the arrangement of supply depots, you've got ships landing the material.
Yes.
What was the arrangement of depots after that?
Well, it was. I think by this time they had took Syracuse. the port, and the stuff was coming in. It was just in fields and whatnot. The, you know, there was no, there weren't in warehouses and things. It was just in dumps and fields, and that would be like, you know, such and such number supply point, and you go in and you draw the battalion rations in bulk and just bring it back to the battalion, or just behind the battalion, let's put it that way, the B echelon, and they'd be split up amongst the four or five companies.
And the platoon trucks would come and take it from...
The company quartermasters would come up with their truck. They had a truck, you see. Each company had a 3-ton truck for their stuff, and the platoons had 1,500 weight trucks. So the quartermaster would bring his 3-ton truck up, or whatever size it was, and collect the company rations. And, you know, well, you've heard me talk about Plod. He was that was his nickname. He's a captain quartermaster. He was strict, but very, very good. If his men had to have it, his men got it. And he made sure they got that whack. And when the company quartermasters, the colour sergeants came up and drew their stuff, he'd give them it. And if he found out they were skimping a little bit to get a store as a day in hand, he would confiscate a whole lot and make them dish it out. He was that type of man. So he made sure that what came up was an entitlement, and what was an entitlement went out to them, and they passed it on to the men. You know, he was that type of man, strict disciplinarian. You know, he was feared by us all, but that's the type of man he was.
What are your next memories of the Sicilian campaign?
Oh, Catania. Primosoli Bridge, the transport wasn't involved in that very much. It was more carriers and mortars and stuff like that, and company lads. The 9th transport wasn't involved very much. I couldn't say about other battalions or companies. But the headquarter company, let's put it that way, the headquarter transport wasn't involved that much.
Did you see or hear what was going on ahead
of
you?
Yes, you could hear it, and you could see stuff coming back. And they say, oh, the bloody mortars have caught it again. The carriers have caught it again. And somebody got, oh, they've had to go in again. And now our transport sergeant may be running around for spares for them, you see, if, you know, stuff wasn't going to plan, like spare trucks and stuff like that, but in the anti-tank section. And then all of a sudden, it was over. We drove over the bridge and it was over. We headed into Cape Catania.
What was the scene as you drove over the bridge?
Well, it was in the hedgerows. It was carnage. But there was no deadline about things like that. You know, they sort of whipped them away very quick and covered them over. And they'd be there, but you just didn't. But, I mean, I must say, by this time you're getting used to the sort of thing, you didn't look for it. You just said, oh, you know, and went past it. And you're looking forward to Catania. Well, you didn't know, but you knew they're on the plains and you could see this big city up ahead.
The battalions, your battalion, as with the others, had taken quite a lot of casualties. And did they seem to be suffering morale-wise
not morale. You didn't seem to have the time to sink in the morale. It was a game. You didn't... No, I don't think morale was ever a point. But you're looking when new reinforcements was coming up and people, like, see, we've got some from the Leicesters. Suddenly come. You said, oh, what's this? The Leicesters was reinforced in the Durhams. So you knew you had suffered quite a bit. And, you know, a fellow comes to me, look at me, I'm a Leicester. And a heavy infantry, not late. He says, I'm a motor man, the prisoner company officer. And that's when you sort of take notes and things like that. That was happening, but you didn't. They just seemed to come up overnight, you know what I mean? Like the Russians, reinforcements came in. Where they got them from, no one knows, but well, different regiments.
Did you see any Germans, prisoners?
Yes. Just coming back out the road.
What were they like?
Oh, they were arrogant. I think they were crack troops. As someone said, they were crack German paratroopers that had been brought in specially for it. They were arrogant and whatnot. But they were just, I mean, they were handed over straight away to Red Caps and marched away back to brigade. You didn't have any deals with, you didn't talk to them, and you just saw them as a come past you. But they were the arrogant paratrooper type of person. And we found out afterwards they were paratroopers. We didn't know at the time, they were just Nazis to us. So, you know, you just looked at them and were on their way, sort of stuff.
After Primosoli, where did you go then?
Well, we took Catania. That was the capital, I think.
What are your memories of Catania?
Well, it was a shambles, you know, buildings down and whatnot. And I remember were going through past the cathedral, because we went straight through onto the outskirts. And the next day when I come back for rations, there was a tram car. We had passed the tram car stand. It was just on the tracks, the wires and all that down. And when I come back the next day for rations or whatever it was, I was coming down for something. But you see, the base would still be in Syracuse. That's what I'm saying. You come back for the stuff. They didn't come up as quick as that. And this tram car was on the side with HD painted on the side, Highland Division. And the Highland Division wasn't there, but that's how they got the name of the highway deck. It's things like that. That's what you notice, things like that. You say, what the hell's that doing here? The one even here. But you just drove on past it. And you laughed at it at the time, really. You know, you said, oh, they're there again with the bagpipes and carried on.
When you came back to the depots for supplies, were there more than one truck? Were there a number of you?
Oh, it'd be different regiments and whatnot. Yes, you know, like...
You'd come in convoy?
No. You see, the captain quarter must have got his orders where the depot was, if it moved. If it didn't, you'd go back there. And you'd go down and you'd have your numbers. Now, I suppose he would contact through brigade and whatnot, and you'd go down and it was issued to you. You'd say, T's this, you know, flour there, that there. And there was people dishing out, but you had the amounts that you had to get, and it was all weighed out in front of you and put on your truck. And you were responsible until you got back to the headquarters.
After Catania, what are your memories?
Well, we just went up the coast road after that to a place called Asherial. And the first thing I remember that was already on the seaside. There was a road and a railway. I presume it was from Catania to Messina. And the railway lines was bent in a big loop. Like you see when an airplane loops a loop. It was just a big, the rails was just bent in a big loop like that. And the carriage that was on, and there was shambles. And we stopped there. We went no further. And that was on the side of Mount Etna. Taormina, we went up onto the side of Etna. And we went no further. We stopped there. That was all Campion and Sicily finished. We just rolled around on the side of Etna and did a bit of bullshitting, you know, with your transport and your weapons and stuff. I think an American band come to entertain me one day, because they had like that. And we used to go down swimming on the beach. It was mined. My mate lost his arm on the beach there. A child ran on the beach and the mine went up and it hit him in the arm. When he tried to save him, he lost his arm. But things like that, we used to go swimming. But just sort of lulled about us. We were finished as far as the 50 day was finished as far as my memory of that place was when Montgomery came in, his usual patter, gather around me, fellas. You've done very well and all this. Where I go, you go. And we said, oh, no. You know, how the moon goes, oh. And the next thing, when you was in Italy, and we said, oh, that means us. Put us on minus. Came home. You know, but that's my memory of Sicily. We thought when he was there, but he must have known about the invasion. And he couldn't tell, but he put it out there, and we were expecting Italy. Because by the time I crossed the Straits of Messina 2 miles and gone into Italy.
Did you know in advance that you were going to go home?
No. Hadn't a clue. That was what Montgomery said. Where I go, yous will go with me. And actually, England never came to our mind because there was no inkling of invasions. We just had Sicily and there was a force and things like that. And as I say, Messina, we weren't allowed to go. Messina was only a few miles up the road, but we weren't even allowed to go that few miles up the road to it. We had to stay away from it completely because the Americans was left for those. So we never saw Messina, and I think it would only be about 10 miles or something from where we were. That's where the coast pushed across.
Had you any opportunities to meet with the Americans at all?
Oh, no, not the Americans. We met more with the civilians because, by this time we're getting the houses. And the bully beef and getting your feet on the table and stuff like that and getting into the houses, actually trying to get off for the girls, but see they've got a strict, you know, regime with the men there, with their women there, and you never got, they'll talk to you, they'll be pleasant to you and invite you in and you give them stuff and they'll give you stuff, but that's as far as it went. There was no way you could get your way with the girls, you know, talk to them pleasant and they're finished. But no, the only Americans we saw was this American band when they come to entertain us. Because for some reason or other, I had to go, and this American officer And he was in this room, and I said to him, "Where's your Batman, sir?" And he said, "Batman? We don't have such things as Batman." You know, it amazed me that he was getting your own kit ready and stuff like that. I must have had to drive him up to where he was, where his quarters was. Could have been a bandmaster, I don't know, but he was an American officer. And I was amazed to think he was just like what we were. Look after yourself. You know, and our officers had their own Batman and everything. But you had that, that's all I had in connection with the Americans. And we never saw another regiment, never saw the Highland Division or anybody, just the 50th of your own clique, and that was it.
What date was this? The end.
Well, you see, I don't know the exact day the campaign finished because the Americans fought after us and they invaded this Christmas scene and that, into Italy. So it was an ongoing thing. But we left the beginning of October, third of October for England. But we still hadn't been told we're coming back to England. They just brought us down to say the Cuse and put us aboard these liners.
Did you leave your transport on the island?
Yes, we left everything. We just came out with water. We had boxes, you know, with weapons and stuff in and papers and that. And a lot of lads was getting bags of lemons and oranges. Not that we knew where we were going, but we won the things, we were perk, and we just put them in sandbags and kept them. But we only sold in your battle rest and your rifle and your office stuff come. But all transport and everything was left.
Was the boat like that you came back on?
Oh, it was a big liner. I can't remember the name of it. I can remember the one I went to the Middle East in, but it was one of the Empress lines, something like that, you know, it was a huge liner. And we just came back through the Mediterranean, you know, as quick as that. On the way out, we had gone all the way around for this time. And they were dropping mines and depth charges and stuff, because it was just like a ship going over rocks. But that was just an escort. But there was no trouble, just came back through the Mediterranean, down and up home.
When you found out that you were coming home to England, what were your immediate feelings?
Well, they still didn't tell us. The first inclination we got that we're coming to England was, you must take your divisional signs down for security. So they were taking off our coats, our dresses, because I think we'd be in battle dress. We were in battle dress because you wore battle dress in the Middle East in the winter. And they heavy coffee, and they put it. I think they issued a polar bear did sign from Iceland or something on our coats, and we refused. You know, said, "Oh no, we're not wearing that," and we just come off with no division did signs on our coats for security. But that was stupid again because we told the civilian, we're telling them exactly who we were, and where we were, where we come from, and what. By this time, we'd come into Gorick in Scotland, and we came down. And we're throwing these oranges and lemons, and we couldn't understand why the people was going balmy. They'd never seen. We were throwing handfuls out the train window. So all the people, all the civilians knew those troop trains going through. So, I mean, the security was a haywire. It was a waste of time.
The journey itself, what was it like? Was it comfortable?
Coming back? Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, it didn't last no length of time. Weeks, something like that. Maybe a week, I don't know. But it was comfortable compared to going out when we're in a cramped troop ship. But, we still had hammocks and stuff like that, but it was sort of relaxed, you know. All you did was play a bingo, housey was then, through the day and lolled out. You did no parades, there was nothing like that, you just, like, deck passengers more than anything else.
Landing in Scotland, I think you said.
Gorick.
What was the landing like? Was there a reception for you?
They were coming? No. It could have been the middle of the night, early hours of the morning. Oh, no, there was no reception, no nothing. Just came in and had a train that was alongside the quay. Like what you had when you come from Dunkirk sort of style. You just went in. But, of course, it was organised, eh? And you set away. You didn't even know where you were going. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we came through Newcastle. Because we're throwing letters out the train window by this time at the platforms. That's how good the security was. But as far as I can gather, there's a show went out at Newcastle, you know, envelopes, and because the change crews and things out there, and they never got them, so they must have been collected up and destroyed. But that's what we're doing, we're throwing, you know, the Amamam home sort of style. But then we finished up in Essex, Saffron Walden in Essex. but we took us straight down there. We never stopped. We, you know, came through. I think we came through Newcastle, down south from there.
Saffron Walden, what kind of a camp were you in there?
Well, we're split up again there. The headquarter company was about 6 miles outside Saffron Walden, and it was a big house, and there was these Nissen huts in front of it, which was the cook houses and whatnot. But that must have been headquarter in general, because the transport was up a little road to a little village about three houses called Radwinder. And that was where the transport section was, because I had a petrol pump. And this is just one Nissen hut with the drivers in there. And the sergeants and drivers and everybody just mucked it. You all in together in one lot. By this, the ninth was like that all the time. There was never any distinction between sergeants and men. But it was just country villages. But it was winter, bitterly cold. I remember coming back to the Middle East, you know, it was a culture shock, really. And there's big aerodromes round about us. It was big American aerodrome on our couple of little road.
Did you get any leave when you came back?
Yes. We got I think, 10 days, 12-day leave or something like that. But we always had special trains for the Durhams. You never just went on leave and, you know, got a ticket and went to the station and caught a train. There was also a special train, and half went, come back, and the other half went and came back. It was always done in two like that. So the special train to Newcastle, and when you come out, the special train there to bring you back.
Were you expected at home when you went?
No. Well, by this time I'd rung up home, you see, you know, because the phone calls only a penny a tuppence in those days, and we had rung up home. And, you know, said we're back in England, and we didn't know the exact date we were getting leave, but we were back. Because fellas had writing at home and things like that then. Because there was no censorship or anything back in this country. We just, you know, back to normal.
On leave, what did you do for the time you were there?
Oh, well, actually, you know, you're playing the hero, but let's face it, you know, you're milking it for all it was worth. By this time, you had learned all the strokes, and you're going to the bar, and you're showing your tan off. Well, everyone was amazed, because you were like, oh, God. But you're showing that off, and you're milking it for all the free. But you sort of stuck together, all the lads, you know, was meeting each other in the pub. That would be, you know, well, in the army together. Like, and you still had that clique, which you taught the civilians, you drunk a beer and all that, but you still had that. Both together. You went out all that day. You said you're more than for that. Well, I'm going out, I'll see you the night and things like that. Or you come back, or they come to the house. But you didn't mix with them somehow or other. I mean, fellas, their wives, that they did. I'm talking about the single ones.
Was there any interest shown by the civilians to where you'd been and what you'd been doing?
No. Your mother, yes. Your parents, yes. But the civilians. Well, unless you told them, they didn't know, because you're just another soldier in khaki. Because by the time you had your 50, you didn't sign up and things like that. But Durham Light Infantry wrote across the top. But I mean, Durham Light Infantry to Newcastle and Gate to Durham was nothing new. There's always hundreds of nothing around.
At what point did you get your little campaign?
Oh, the African Star. Oh, they just lined us up in this camp at Radwinder. And they give us a bit of ribbon, and they said, sew down a bit cardboard and a bit ribbon. They said, sew it on, and sew it on your tunic. And a little eight with it, and you just sew it on your tunic. Because there's a funny story about that, really. See, I was single, but I had been, you know, not married, and no girls, no nothing. And when we came back from the Middle East, this camp at the back was a big house, and there was akak in there, searchlights. Girls, they're matching on the searchlights and the guns. And one of my jobs there, you see, the transport just didn't go. You had to go for coal for the huts for the lads, pick up rations, and drive the trucks. The lads used to run so many trucks into Saffron Walden each night with the lads in the back for the go out each night. Or the police truck, you know, the regimental police. Well, when we went to the station to pick these. This gang of girls up, or ATS up, that was coming in, standing on the platform at a place called Orlean, because Saffron Walden never stationed. And a woman sergeant major was standing next to me, and she says to me, I'll be riding back with you. And I didn't have a hat. I remember I had borrowed a cap, and it was like a red cap, you know, a hard hat and thing. And it was over me as I looked right close. But when the train came in, she was allocating them trucks, and this young girl came off. I said to her, in the cab with me. I got my eye on her straight away. She says, in the cab with me. And the sergeant major says, she's not, I am. I says, well, hard look. I says, she's in the cab. I says, you can either squeeze on the side of her, or not at all. Anyway, she got in, you see. So actually, I put a date on with her for that night. So she says to her mate, well, the mates was in there, all making dates. And she says, oh, I'm all right, I've got a date. She told me this afterwards, I'm all right, I've got a date. She says, well, how do you know? Just me. Ah, she says, well, he's got a medal up, he's got a ribbon. There was 800 men that come with ribbons up. I'm at you, you know, we followed each other and whatnot. But that, you know, the whole battalion had the ribbon up. She didn't know that, she only saw me. But that you see, that's the transport duties. You had to pick these up and do things like that with them.
How did the people of that area settle with you?
Well,
set up relationships.
They weren't bad, but there's you know, they got swamped. I mean, you know, it was only a little village. It had a town hall and pubs. Naturally, you all flocked to the pubs, and you swamped the place. Really, you run a dance in the town hall. There's a dance run there, and there's Americans around about as well because they had American aerodromes, and the people were just overwhelmed with troops. So massing, and a lot of fighting went on, stacks of fighting between us and Americans and whatnot. And you know, it wasn't.
What was the kind of cause that brought that on?
Well, we objected. The Yanks been over here with our money, and we said, oh, grabbing the girls and all that, and the fellas was getting annoyed. And they were showing off it, and they could buy spirits and stuff. They had the money for it, and were allowed to. We weren't allowed spirits, and we didn't have the money to buy spirits. Little things like that niggled you, and you resented them. And they were to us, they were an arrogant brash lot, you know, they're bragging. Everyone was a Hollywood film star and things like that. And naturally, the Durhams didn't like it, and they weren't that sort of people, and they didn't like it. And it caused a lot of friction.
Yes, you were experienced soldiers, and they'd not.
They hadn't seen Angry Wasp. But on top of that, you see, they had the what we call the snowdrops. That was the American military police, because they wore a white helmet. Now, we only had our regimental police, so they had to bring the military, divisional military police. Well, let's face it, your own MPs had been in action with you. They'd been to the front directing traffic and all that. And they leaned to you, they observed the rules, but if they could bend them, they'd bend them in your favour. And when there was any trouble, you know, the American police would just clobber the American, you know, hit them back of the neck with a bat, and that wasn't allowed and all that, and the Red Caps wouldn't do it. And there's trouble between them. They said, well, you should be doing it. They said, oh, no, these are, you know, they wouldn't do it. And they had lots of that going on, stuff like that. And you all had your own pubs. If you went to, like, the Eight Bells, transport used Eight Bells, nobody else went in. And if a American came in, they got chucked out, and that was the top and bottom. And there was all little niggly things like that. And yet, we used to go to that air, we used to put those on, we used to go to the aerodrome, we used to put a good meal on, and entertain through the night, things like that. But in the town where the beer was, it was always trouble.
Having been in the desert, you had a kind of very casual way of dressing. Was this a problem when you go back to England and into the more regimental system?
No. It was cold, so you buttoned your neck up and things like that. But they didn't insist on it. You had to be smart and tidy, clean, and actually you were proud, you know, we were a bit cocky as well, let's face it, and but there was no, I mean, the desert dress, you didn't wear dress, you didn't wear anything, because you couldn't wash it, so you only wore a hat, and in Sicily, you got used to the cadine a little bit, and you broke in a bit, but you still, were still wearing yellow, we got yellow scarf for aircraft recognition, we're wearing them as scarves and things like that, walking around. And they said, like, you know, it's not done, they, you know, play the game, look like soldiers, and you go out, your hat would always be on your lapel, you never wore it, and there was murder on that because you couldn't salute, things like that. But they didn't really tighten up on the dress, never did. Whether that was just the Durhams or what, I don't know, but they never really did.